Welcome to the History of the Caribbean audiobook. If you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss a story. Today, we're honored to bring you Bullets Couldn't Kill Her, The Myth and the Method. Get ready to immerse yourself in a powerful narrative that goes beyond music into legacy, resistance, and roots. Because here, our mission is simple: to keep our culture alive, one story at a time. They say the bullet froze midair, spun like a leaf caught in wind, and dropped at her feet. No wound, no mark. Just Nanny, standing tall, barefoot in red, staring down a row of stunned British soldiers whose hands trembled even though their muskets had fired true. No one knows if it really happened, but the Maroons believe it. And that belief, the fear it planted, was more powerful than any cannon. Because once you believe your enemy cannot die, you stop fighting to win. You start fighting to survive. And Queen Nanny didn't just lead with strategy. She led with myth. She turned herself into a story the British couldn't kill. This insight explores one of the most powerful elements of her legacy: the myth that Queen Nanny could catch bullets with her hands, or between her thighs, or with charms hidden in her red cloth, or with pure spirit force. There are variations, but the message was always the same. You cannot harm the woman who walks with the dead. Let's return to the mountains for a moment. The war between the British and the Maroons wasn't a traditional war. It was spiritual, psychological, a chess match fought with shadows and symbols as much as it was with blades and bush ambushes. The British brought soldiers trained in linear battle formations, but the Maroons moved through fog, through tree roots, through sound and silence. Nanny understood something few generals did: that fear wins wars. And she made herself terrifying, not through cruelty, but through mystery. She disappeared and reappeared. She warned of attacks before scouts returned. She walked into battle alone, unarmed, and left untouched. There's one particular story that Maroons tell with sacred reverence. It was near Nanny Town, deep in the Blue Mountains. The British had sent a search party to locate her base camp. They thought they had the upper hand. They had a map, a guide, and over 50 men. At the edge of the trail, Nanny appeared. Not hidden, not armored, just there. Her arms crossed, her gaze fixed. They panicked. A young soldier, scared, eager, maybe drunk, raised his musket. Fired. They watched the flash, heard the crack, saw the smoke rise, and then nothing. Nanny was still standing, but in her hand, the musket ball. She dropped it like a pebble and walked away. Again, was it real? That's not the question. The question is, why did the story spread? Why did British soldiers whisper it in their camps? Why did Maroon children fall asleep with it in their ears? Why, 200 years later, are we still talking about it? Because myth is memory's shield. Because Nanny knew that resistance required more than weapons. It required legend. Let's dig deeper. What made the bullet myth work? Why did it terrify trained men who had survived European battlefields? Because it disrupted logic. Because it defied certainty. Because Nanny stood outside of their understanding, and that scared them more than anything. To the British, war was about force, numbers, artillery. To Nanny, war was about belief. She turned the jungle into a psychological battlefield. The birds fell silent when she approached. She planted banana leaves in specific patterns near enemy trails to confuse their minds. She placed dolls made of bone and feathers along the riverbanks, ritual objects designed to shake their confidence. Soldiers reported hallucinations, hearing voices, seeing flickers of red between the trees at night. Some deserted. Some shot themselves by accident. Some never returned. And yet, it wasn't only magic. There was method in the myth. Queen Nanny was a master of deception, terrain, and tactical illusion. She used traps, disguised pits, noise decoys, mirrored flanks. She sent children ahead to drop leaves or bird feathers, tiny cues that told her warriors exactly where the enemy was moving. She trained her people to vanish into the earth, to mimic the sounds of owls and crickets to communicate. She even altered trails weekly so that no path remained the same. So yes, the bullets may have been real, but so were the tactics that made them miss. Still, the myth of the bullet wasn't just battlefield strategy. It was also spiritual armor. For the Maroons, Nanny was not just a general, she was a priestess, a living shrine, the embodiment of their ancestors' will. She wore charms tied in red thread, blessed by fire and water. She bathed in sacred springs on full moons. She meditated under silk cotton trees where spirits were believed to live. Her body was protected by ritual, by plant, by word, by intention. And when you live like that, with total alignment, you don't need steel to deflect bullets. Your energy does it for you. There's another layer too, and it's about representation. Because for Black women, especially enslaved, colonized, silenced women, Nanny's myth represented something rare. A woman who could not be violated. Not physically, not politically, not spiritually. The bullet couldn't pierce her. That meant no whip could scar her. No hand could drag her. No law could silence her. She was untouchable. And in a world built on touching what doesn't belong to you, that is divine rebellion. What's fascinating is that after her death, the bullet myth didn't disappear. It evolved. New versions popped up in Cuba, in Suriname, in Haiti, places where resistance leaders channeled her story. A priest in Trinidad claimed to dream of her rhythm. A freedom fighter in Brazil wore a red sash to honor her legend. Even contemporary revolutionaries, women who stand against empire in courts, on streets, on screens, invoke her. Not just for what she did, but for what she became. An invincibility. Not of flesh, but of purpose. Let me be honest. There's power in myth. But there's also danger. Because sometimes we mythologize so much, we forget the woman beneath the legend. So let's remember. Nanny bled. She buried her own. She feared losing everything she built. She prayed with cracked lips and blistered feet. She was not a ghost. She was human. But what made her eternal wasn't perfection. It was alignment. She aligned her fear with purpose, her breath with ritual, her movement with mission. And from that alignment came the myth. The bullet didn't touch her? Maybe. But it didn't have to. Because she had already become what bullets cannot kill. So what now? What do we do with this insight? We ask ourselves, what myth are we living? Are we writing a story of fear, of survival, of apology? Or are we walking like Nanny did, in story already immortal? What bullets are you catching? What belief do you embody so fiercely that the empire flinches when it sees you? Because somewhere inside you, a red cloth is tied, a rhythm is pulsing, a bullet is falling to the ground unspent, and the world is watching.